Good morning. How are you doing? Right, I'm really hoping this works today. Those of you who tried to watch this on Friday will know it didn't go very well, or Thursday. Thursday. There was an issue, and I think there still might be an issue with the upload speed here in the studio. In fact, I know there's an issue because my provider has acknowledged there is one and is working on it. But I just did a quick test, and I think the upload speed is holding at a few megs per second, so we might just be okay. Please God, not that I believe in God. Couple of quick comments before I move on. I'm not doing the papers this morning. I'll tell you why in a minute. As Breeze asks, why am I using USA time and date? Because I'm a technological numpty, mate. I don't have a clue. I just turned this stuff on even, so I don't know. So there's quite a nice few comments there. I might be a bit lax with the comments today because I want to concentrate on what I'm going to say to you now. So I put a rather intriguing title on the video: "The Truth, the Whole Truth, and Nothing But the Truth." Well, I don't know what the truth is, but I can talk about my own truth. First of all, I hope you've had a good weekend and you're in fine fettle. It's June 10th, and it's all right out. It's quite nice. June 10th, 2019. The weekend was abominable. It was absolutely miserable. I never spent so much time indoors in any one particular weekend, but it's been horrendous here in the north west of the country. I think they got better weather further south, but we've had a nightmare with rain. Dreadful. But look on the bright side. The reservoirs probably needed it. So I'll keep an eye on the comments, but I want to talk about. And I'm hoping that, because I've made a couple of bullet points here, because I don't want to forget things. You know, I'm always unscripted, totally unscripted, but I've made a couple of bullet points and I've got some stuff to put on screen and I hope it all works well. Okay, so I'm going to start this off and you'll see me messing around here as I'm trying to organize myself. There is no producer. This is the worst live stream in the world ever on YouTube and damn proud of it. I am too. Now, keep those comments coming in, right? I will get to them in a few minutes. Now, I've never been comfortable with the figure 6 million Jews were murdered in Nazi Germany. There's a big lie in there somewhere. I said that. I said it before. In fact, I've said it more than once. And I said it when I was interviewing a man called Nick Collerstrom. Here's Nick here. Nick is a Holocaust denier and makes no bones about that. He's written a book or more than one book on that subject and he's spoken about it around the country. And I interviewed him about 3.5 years ago. It was on Holocaust Memorial Day. It wasn't, it might sound far-fetched, it might be incredulous for some to believe that that wasn't deliberate. It was not. It wasn't designed or done in any way to wind anybody up or to cause any offence. He had a book out, and it was a book where he was questioning the existence of gas chambers in Auschwitz and elsewhere. So I brought him on, Nick Collerstrom. I've described Nick in the past as a friend of the show. I've known him for years. The first time I got to know him was when he, it was Terror on the Tube, wasn't it? And if you haven't read Terror on the Tube, it's a book where he forensically examines all the available evidence around the 7th of July bombings. And he concludes that, well, he arrives at a very different conclusion than the investigators of that atrocity arrived at. I think Terror on the Tube is a brilliant book. I've been on the record and I will go on the record again. Saying it's an excellent book, and what it does do, regardless of what you think of his conclusion in the book, is it definitely pokes a lot of holes in the narrative around the 7th of July bombings. It really does, right? Regardless of where you end up yourself at the end of it, but it's worth a read. As I said, Nick is a Holocaust denier. I've interviewed him more than once, several times on that particular subject. But on this particular day, 2016, I think it was, early 2016, I spoke to him about this book that he had out. And this has come up in the course of the last few days. And I want to talk a little bit about that and then move on. When I was speaking with him, even though I did challenge him on his contention that nobody was gassed, I did challenge him, and I pointed out that there were, on the record, there was testimony from Nazis who were there. And each time he said that, I put a counterpoint to him, because I don't share that point of view. I don't share his point of view. It wasn't my finest moment as a broadcaster. It wasn't. I listened back to it for the first time last night, since I did it, really. I don't spend too much time listening back to older interviews. I do listen to snippets of the programme from time to time to critique myself and my own performance. But I did listen back to this interview I did with Nick Collerstrom, and it wasn't my best moment. I wasn't nearly as robust enough as I could have been in challenging him at times during that conversation. And I take the slings and arrows, I take that on board. But it was in no way my lack of robust challenges throughout the 45 or 50 minutes is in no way an example of, or is in no way leans to me supporting his point of view. I didn't, and I don't. Wasn't great. And I'll come back to that and why I said what I said and why I stand by it today in a couple of minutes, for what it's worth. Alrighty. So I know there's an enormous amount of comments coming in. Thanks. I'll get to them in a minute. So about 4 days ago, I was asked on Twitter by a woman who's a journalist of some description, like I said, entertainment or something, about my feelings on the Holocaust. And I said I was sick to death of it. I am sick to death of it. 500 million books, films, television shows, documentaries, memorials. It never ends. And I said that the Holocaust has been exploited. That drove people even more crazy. So I referred them to a book by Norman Finkelstein called The Holocaust Industry. As you can see, Reflections on the Exploitation of Jewish Suffering. Anybody who knows me knows that I've interviewed Norman Finkelstein a couple of dozen times over the years. And this is going back to 2010, by the way, my introduction to him. And I've interviewed others who have studied the exploitation of the murder of Jews by the architects of the State of Israel. That's what I believe. I believed it before reading his book. And I didn't read his book when it was published. I read it some years later. And I believe it now. Nobody tells me what to think. Not that I'm not influenced by the writings and the opinions of others, but it's what I've come to believe. And in the book, Norman argues that the threat of indiscriminate slanders and the calling people anti-Semitic has been and is a very effective way to deter people from discussing Holocaust industry subjects or issues. Again, it's a very trite synopsis of that book. It's not a massive tome. It's not massive in terms of the pages. It's not a heavy read, but it's a very good read. And a guy called James Montaigne, or Montagne, was writing for the Independent Institute at the time, and he said, when reviewing Finkelstein's book, Holocaust Entrepreneurship and Rent Seeking played the determining role in creating the modern state of Israel. Holocaust Entrepreneurship and Rent Seeking played the determining role in creating the modern state of Israel. That was James Montagne, right? Okay. And you got to bear with me now. I'm not very quick at doing this. So let me put in This guy. Who's this guy? Well, in the review of Finkelstein's book, he references, does Montaigne, a man called Alfred Lilienthal. That's him there, that's Alfred Lilienthal. He's a Jewish historian, a controversial Jewish historian and anti-Zionist. Now, this guy is very relevant because he spoke against the creation of Israel, and he was very much an opponent of US policy towards Israel. And he invented or coined a term or a phrase called Holocaustomania or Holocaustmania. And that meant to him the characterization, the use of rhetoric around the Holocaust to stifle public debate. Back then, Lilienthal was complaining about the use of the Holocaust to stifle public debate about Zionism and about Palestine. This is true. And Montaigne writes of Lilienthal, who's pictured there. He documented the opportunistic post-war actions of entrepreneurial Zionist organizers who manipulated for essentially private purposes both the post-war sensitivities of national governments and the anguish and misery of Jewish concentration camp survivors. Lilienthal's scholarly efforts were rewarded with anonymous death threats and several years of FBI surveillance. So he coined Holocaustomania as a phrase, meaning using the suffering of those who not only were killed in the camps, but who also survived them, to stifle public debate about Zionism and Palestine. But he went on to say that Zionist organizers manipulated for private purposes the post-war sensitivities of national governments. So they managed to create a narrative. They managed to basically dictate policy for national governments around the world, around Zionism, a political ideology, and Palestine. This is true. This is the guy here, Lilienthal, right? Keep it in mind because I'm going to come back to that in a few minutes' time now. So my response to the woman who asked me about the Holocaust, me saying that I was sick of it, which I am. I've said that 1,000 times, right? Sick to death of it. Unleashed what has become all too predictable outrage, which defines social media and defines Twitter now. No debate. It's a platform for people to rant and scream at people whose ideas they disagree with, and to pile in on people and to signal, as I said before, to the herd that you are a good person, you are not racist, you are perfect, you hold no prejudices against anybody, you are really good. Take the opportunity and pile in on the person who is being called racist and bigoted and anti-Semitic and all the rest of it. So pretty soon I was being called a Holocaust denier. Oh dear. And it's been relentless, it's still going on now, and I'm glad it has, because it's very revealing, really, and it's very helpful. I'm lucky, I've been around the media a long time, at every level of it, and I've got very thick skin, and while I do react very robustly, and while I do go over the top in taking on those who choose to defame me online, it doesn't bother me. It's a fantastic opportunity for me to highlight what social media has become and how it's being manipulated and by whom. Very helpful. So pretty soon, you had members of parliament, you had national newspaper journalists, and you had writers for publications like the Jewish Chronicle and shed loads of sock accounts tweeting stuff at me. So you had some genuine stuff. And you had sock accounts. Sock accounts are brand new accounts. They've been set up within the last couple of days or the last week. Not following anybody. Very few tweets. This is Hasbara. And it is Hasbara incarnate. So these accounts throwing stuff at me, racist, bigot, anti-Semite, blah, 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 blah. I'll give you a flavour of it, the real ones anyway, just a little flavour. Again, bear with me, I'm terribly slow. And I'm sorry, I know there are a lot of comments coming in there. And I'm sure there are comments that are critical, and I'm happy to read those. I'll get to them in a minute. So a lot of this stuff is coming in. I don't know where to start with this stuff, though. Let's start with Alex Sobel. Now, he is a Jewish guy who's a Labour MP in Leeds and said to me that this is what I do. I make claims not backed up by evidence and throw Zionist as a way of trying to make it look legitimate. Accusing Jews of exploiting genocide really puts you on the right side of the argument. Of course, I never accused Jews of exploiting genocide. This is the thing, you see. We live in a post-fact and a post-truth world. I've never accused Jews of exploiting anything. Least of all the Holocaust. He was tweeting after my response to a Jewish guy called Marlon Solomon, whom I'll come to in a few minutes' time. And I had said to Solomon that some other person who was tweeting me was in a tiny minority, and that Jewish academics around the world do challenge the exploitation of the Holocaust and do appear on my show all the time. But according to people like Sobel, who's a Zionist, and this guy Solomon, who's insignificant really, he's just a local Jewish guy in Manchester, he's not got much of a platform, he's not a journalist, he's not really much of anything, he's just an ordinary guy basically. The Jews I've interviewed about the exploitation of the plight of Jews are the wrong Jews, according to these guys. So this is Alex Sobel then. I wasn't too thrilled about him yesterday, and I probably have my response to him here. Have I got it? Hope I've got these in order. But anyway, look, it doesn't matter, does it? So Gilad Atzmon, born in Israel, of course, born into Jewishness, and has written several books, including on subjects to do with Jewish identity, Jewish power, Jewish politics, and recently a book called Being in Time, which is an amazing book about identity politics. Once again, a Labour Party politician, he meant party, is caught up in an attempt to slander Richard. It doesn't matter. Don't slander me, it doesn't matter. He should know it was actually Abba Ibn, the legendary Israeli diplomat who coined "there is no business like show of business" back in the 1950s. That's true as well. Okay? I'm not the first person to talk about the exploitation of the Holocaust. I'm not the first Goyim or Gentile to do it. Zionists and Jews have been talking about it for years, long before I ever did. This is all true. Okay. Have we more from Sobel? Sobel said about 1 in 20 members of the Knesset, including 5 ministers and 3 speakers, were Holocaust survivors. So are you saying they're exploiting their own suffering? Patently not. Patently, no, I haven't. This is the thing, you see. Don't let the truth get in the way of a good lie and a good smear. Not saying that at all. I'm saying that Zionists and the ideology Zionism has and does exploit the Holocaust and uses it today to justify the whole-scale slaughter and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. They invoke the Holocaust all the time. It never ends. Right. That was Sobel. Let's get rid of that. It's all very interesting stuff, this. Is it? It isn't. You're bored out of your mind, aren't you? All right, okay. Well, we'll speed it up as best we can. So this woman has written for The Guardian. I read all the newspapers and I understand she's written a lot of articles. I haven't read anything recent by this woman who said that if downplaying the scale of historical Jewish suffering is important for your current politics, it says something pretty awful about the thinking underlying your views. 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. Much migration to Israel was driven by fear, escaping horror. Right. I haven't downplayed the historical suffering of those who were rounded up and brought to those camps at all. By saying, and I'll come back to it in a minute, that I have had and do have difficulty with the number 6 million, not the only one, and I'll explain in a minute why I've said that before, and what I meant by the big lie. There is a big lie somewhere. I'll tell you why I think like that in a minute. Not that it will matter, but I'll tell you anyway. But at no point have I attempted to downplay the importance of it, to downplay it, or to minimise it. Minimise is a word they love. Minimise. You're trying to minimise it. You're trying to make it less important. No. The mass murder of any cultural group of people, any identity group, or any religious group of people is important for, well, for everybody. It's important for understanding how these things can happen, why they did happen, how they were enabled, who enabled it. Of course, that's never discussed. And to make sure that, as you often say yourselves, these people, to make sure that it never happens again. But of course it happens again time and time and time and time again, doesn't it? Why is it that when you use the word Holocaust to describe other genocides in history, why is it that Zionists come out of the woodwork screaming anti-Semitism? Why do they do that? Why are they so protective of the term Holocaust? Why do they claim it as unique to their culture and their religious group? Why? These are all important questions, but you're not going to get the answers to them on Twitter. This is the whole point. This is why social media, I believe it's why social media came to be in the first place. Okay? You can't have a discussion with somebody in 240 characters. You can't. Not when you're trying to make a point to somebody and then 5, 6 or 10 other accounts, many of them troll accounts, start weighing in and screaming and muddying the waters. There's no chance to have a debate with somebody and to flesh out what it is you really believe, what it is you really think, and why you came to conclude that, why you reached that point. So this is nonsense from Wilkinson. Just nonsense. Meaningless garbage, right? Wilkinson finds racism everywhere. This is her having a go Danny Finkelstein a couple of years ago about this dual loyalty stuff around the Labour anti-Semitism allegations. Abby Wilkinson calling Danny Finkelstein a racist scumbag. So that's what Wilkinson does. She's a virtuous signaller. She's a mainstream journalist. It's important for mainstream journalists to take any opportunity they can to go after people online and spuriously label them as haters or scumbag racists or whatever, right? Abby Wilkinson. A lot more I could say about Abby Wilkinson, but I won't. Because I'm not petty. I am sometimes on Twitter, I'll admit it. But in the cold light of day, I'm not petty. In the cold light of day, but I can be petty. Very interesting. This is Baroness Neuberger. Hope I didn't pronounce that. It's Neuberger or Neuberger. Why do I bring her up? I'm going to grab some of this and bring it to you later on. She has a new book out and she was promoting it on the Adam Bolton show on Sky News this morning. And she made a couple of interesting statements in there. She defined anti-Semitism for Adam Bolton and she defined it as an irrational hatred for Jewish people. That was her definition of it. An irrational hatred for Jewish people. And then she went on to say that Jews are not a race. Funny enough, I made this point several times over the weekend and ironically, I was compared to Tommy Robinson and I was called a right winger because Robinson defends his statements about Islam and the Muslim. He defends them by saying, well, Muslims are not a race. Yeah, no, I've talked about this in its proper context for years. Jews are a cultural group. They are a... It is an identity group. It's very simplistic, but that's about the size of it. Regardless of how many Jews there are around the world, they are not a racial group unto themselves. They are not a race, effectively. Anti-Semitism and irrational hatred of Jews. Are there people in the world today who have or hold an irrational hatred of Jewish people, who just hate them. Yeah, I suppose so. I've met one or two over the years. Like I said, if we leave the Colostrum interview to one side, and even the Shablo interview, and I've robustly challenged Alison Shablo in the 3 or 4 times I've interviewed her, robustly. Okay, you can't make a comparison between my treatment of Alison and my treatment of Colostrum. Yes, I said I found Alison Shablo's songs to be witty and funny. Yes, doesn't mean I agree with them. And yes, I did say that I don't think she's racist, because I don't. It's my opinion. Live with it. Fuck off. It's my opinion, right? I like the woman. Don't agree with her. And I make it clear in my interviews with her, where I repeatedly interrupt her and ask her about hating Jews, that I don't agree with her. But doesn't mean I dislike her. Should I dislike her? If you're a Jewish person and you were offended by Alison Shablo's songs, and you're entitled to be, by the way, if you want to be, because of that, should I dislike her? I don't know the woman. Never met her. But I enjoy talking with her on the radio. And I think it's preposterous that she would be sued for malicious communications. Outrageous. Disagree with Alison? Yeah. But I'll defend to the death her right and the right of Nick Colostrum to say whatever it is they want to say. And I would urge Zionists, or Zionist Jews, there's a difference, or Jews, there's a difference, to debate these people publicly. Debate them. Go on a forum with them. It doesn't have to be mine. Don't trust you, Richie, because you have sympathy. Okay, fair enough. The truth is I don't. But you don't have to trust me. You can debate them in public elsewhere. So how it used to be, right? Do you remember that? Back in the day. So that was Baroness Neuberger. Written this book, which I think I might read. Might borrow it from my local library. Might ask them to get it in. I'm not going to give £20 to Baroness Neuberger because she's a Jew and I hate Jews. No, because I can probably guess the arguments that the Baroness is making in the book. I can probably repeat them by heart, but I'll leave that for now. So, yeah, it was interesting. An irrational hatred of Jews. Well, it's irrational to hate anybody, isn't it? It's irrational to hate any group of people, even fascist Zionists. Hatred is not good. That was Neuberger. Let me get back down to where I was going. And before we go back there. So those tweets, look, it went on and on and on and on. I've left one out. There's been some ridiculous stuff in there. Look at this. This is how bad it got. Some guy called Eddie Cantor. Eddie Cantor tweeted out, not for the first time, apparently, Richie Allen's anti-Semiticism is grotesquely anti-Semitic to my Jewish face in my local park. When I found out who he was, I reminded him on Twitter and he blocked me. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. I've gone looking for this guy. I'm pretty sure I didn't block him. There are two other people who've got access to my Twitter account. And I've asked them, do they remember this guy ever? And did they block him? I can't figure it out. I was grossly anti-Semitic to somebody's Jewish face in their local park. And when I found out who he was, I blocked him. Right. Do I need to dignify that? It went on. Let me please reassure all the doubters beneath that I met Richie in my local park within 5 minutes. He was ranting about Rothschilds and Zionazis. I told him I was Jewish and offended. He taught me to fuck myself and stormed off. He hates Jews. So, met this guy in a local park. Before he taught me he was Jewish, I began to rant about the Rothschilds and Zionazis. Jesus, Mary, and Holy Saint Joseph. No, I didn't. And I don't hate Jews. I don't have an irrational hatred for Jewish folks or anybody else. This is true. Alan, you're taking your time getting to this whole there is a big lie. I'm not. I'll get to it in a minute and I'll tell you what I mean. And then you can fuck off. Right, so this is Eddie Cantor. My God. 3 days ago, this same guy, Eddie Cantor, I think he's deleted the tweet since, said he was going to call the police because I tweeted that I was sick of hearing about the Holocaust. I'd love to hear how that conversation went. Do you know what I might do someday for the crack? I'm not the best at doing accents. If you've listened to the Richie Allen Show over the years, you'll know I'm not very good at doing accents. I can barely do my own. I'd love to ring up the Manchester Met and say, there's this guy called Richie Allen. And he said he's sick of the Holocaust. Holocaust. Please investigate him. I wonder, in this era now where at least one police force in the UK is asking people to contact them with evidence of hate crimes and hate speech, I wonder what the Manchester Met would say. We're on it. We'll be there in 5. Woo! Get the fucking racist. Right, so that was Eddie Cantor. Mad. Shall I read a few notes before I move on? Or a few tweets, shall I? Okay. There's millions. Don't do your Scottish accent. So somebody has called me a bald pig. I'm bald. Right, I've got to go way back. Hi to Ellie, to Stuart, to Martin, to Sean, Max McKay, to Little Glob, to Gail, to Joe, Ellie in the Midlands, Julie Waters, not the Julie Waters, Michael Flynn, Gary Lennon. How's the new gaff, Richie? Getting used to it. Hi to Charlotte and Burnley, to Joe Public. How you, Joe? Hi to Stoned Crow. Hi to Andrew Brown. Hi to Martin. Hi to Stuart Frampton. Hi to Cross of Lorraine. Somebody's ringing me now. I don't know who it is. I've got a decline. This is, I told you, it's the worst live stream ever. Anybody with a brain would have muted the phone, but not me. Thank you so much to Jason in Rotterdam for donating to the programme. Thank you, Jason. It means a lot to me, mate. Hi to Tango Barry and the Dacia. How you doing, Tango? I've said Sugspiracy already. Kaylee. It's not buffering this today. Thank God for that. Hi to Lightbringer. And to Quantum, who talks about the Irish potato famine. Yeah, hi to Patrick, who met Norman Finkelstein in Belfast a couple of years ago during a book festival, got a signed copy of his book, Recommended Reading. Thank you for that. Lots and lots and lots and lots of comments come in there. So just go onto YouTube. You must be there already. Go into the live chat. I am a bit of a dunce sometimes. Go into the live chat and debate. Debate. There you go. Yeah, I can't find any rude ones. 2-6 says 4 million Vietnamese, that's right. And there are many more. Tweets. I keep saying they're tweets. They're not tweets, mother of God. Hi to Jonathan Rainey, to Alfie, to Sniggering Sam, to Orwell84, to Jason Williamson. Morning, Jason. Have I said Mick Brown? I have. To Findlay Johnson, to Christopher Hickman. Thank you, folks, men and women, for your messages. Hi to Peter Spencer, long-time listener. How you doing, Peter? To Guymaster Flex, to Bob Wimpenny, and to David Yates, to JD Lotus. My God, there are probably a couple of hundred messages in there now. All right, and I'm sorry for not getting to them all. Wow. Okay. So on this went on Twitter. It went on and on and on and on and on and on. I've been broadcasting. Excuse me. I've been broadcasting and producing for 20 years now. And I am a socialist. Excuse me. I'm not a social democrat, not a progressive, not a liberal. I'm a socialist. I believe in socialist ideas as a way to empower people and communities. And I believe that the workers should own the means of production. I've always said that. So to say, I would say that I was anti-racist, but I won't even say that because that's cheap. It sounds cheap because it's been hijacked, that term, anti-racism, and cheapened by virtue signalers and social democrats, the new left have hijacked it. Anti-racist. So I won't claim to be anti-racist. It's self-explanatory. My body of work going back to the late 1990s. Just listen to the show. I've been arguing for years. For years I've been arguing against those who scapegoat another person or another group and blame them for their problems. And blame them, target them, and discriminate against them because they believe that that group of people is responsible for the paradigm. For years I've been recently, listen to recent programs where I've had alt-right people on with their own big audiences. And I've robustly challenged them on their views, not only about Jews, but about their views on Muslims as well. Because I don't agree with them. I don't ban them, and I don't play the hero and scream racist. Only once, and only with one person. And that's Tommy the Tit Robinson. Because Tommy is a vile racist. He's a genuine racist. To the bone. God love him. But I wouldn't have him marginalised or banned either. I'd prefer him out in the open where you can lampoon him and you can challenge his ideology and demonstrate that it's not got a lot of depth to it and there's not much rationale to it. Tommy Robinson. I wouldn't ban him. Find a few people about these things, vigorously disagree with them, but I listen to their points of view. Always have, always will. Neither Muslims, Jews, Eastern Europeans, Somalians, West Indians, Slovakians, people from Timbuktu, none of them are responsible for the surreal, dystopian, Orwellian paradigm that we exist in today. But we're conditioned to believe they're responsible because it furthers and enables divide and conquer. That's what it's all about. So back to my interview with Nick Collerstrom and my statement that I'm not comfortable with the 6 million figure and that there's a big lie in there somewhere. Something which I've said more than once on my shows, incidentally. More than once. I believe, and have believed for many years, that the plight of Jews in Germany was seized upon by the architects and the gatekeepers of the state of Israel. Remember now, when contemplating Zionism and Israel, that the United Kingdom or Britain is more to blame for what happened in Palestine than Zionists. Number one, and I've repeatedly stated this as well, before you get stuck into racist Zionists about Palestine, look at England, or look at the UK, look at Britain, we should say. Look at the UK's part in the two agreements which led to where we are now with the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, the Sykes-Picot agreement with France, and the Balfour Declaration a year later, agreed by Britain, which had no claim to Palestine at the time. If anybody had a claim, it was Turkey. At that particular time, it's Britain. The declaration, the Balfour Declaration and the Sykes-Picot Agreement are null and void, which is why people like me say that Israel is illegitimate. Okay? And Zionists go screaming and crying and bawling and roaring, begging to be protected from people who say such things. Protect me from this. He says that we don't exist. No, he doesn't. You patently, obviously do exist. You are a person. Culturally, you belong to a group called the Jews. Of course you exist. And Israel does exist now, sadly. Right? Sadly, according to me. Because of agreements that are null and void under international law and because of ethnic cleansing. This is real. based on the nonsense of the Balfour Declaration, the United Nations agreed to partition Palestine. We know this. Which at that time contained, I don't know what the real figure is, somewhere between 25 and 32 or 33% were Jews in 1947. Later on, after nearly a million non-Jews were cleansed from Palestine, a couple of years later, 49, Jews were then 80% of the population in Palestine. How do you account for that? Well, Zionist terrorist groups began a campaign of terror and ethnic cleansing to rid Palestine of the Palestinian people. This is true. You know who these terrorist groups were? The Stern Gang and Irgun and all the rest of it. And that's where I began to take an interest in the exploitation of the Holocaust, me personally. And I said to Colerstrom back in 2016, I have a problem with the numbers. There's a big lie there somewhere. Historians will tell you somewhere between 3 and 6 million. There's no exact figure. That's what historians will tell you. This is where I have a problem with the numbers. Now, if it was 5,000, it doesn't change the fact that Jews were living in Germany and in neighbouring countries and they were scapegoated and blamed for Versailles and everything else. Blamed for the sanctions that crippled Germany. Jews were blamed for it. It wasn't Jews' fault. But they were scapegoated. They were rounded up and they were sent off to camps where they were killed by being worked to death or they were executed in great numbers. I have no doubt. But how many? And is it possible that the numbers were inflated? Is it possible? Is it possible? There's a question. I don't know is the answer. That's the truthful answer. I don't know. Oh, it's minimized. Oh, you're minimizing. You're trying to water down the horrors of it. How could you possibly water down the horrors of it? No. No. Not in a million years you couldn't. Because whether it was 10 million, 6, 5, 1, 2.5, doesn't change the fact that German people turned a blind eye while the government identified a group of people, said they're the reason why everything is fooped. Let's make pictures and put them up all over the place with the big noses and the money. And we'll give you your scapegoat and we'll deal with it. You couldn't minimise that. Like I said, whether it's 5,000, far more than 5,000, 6 million, 5 million or 25 million. People, oh, why do you doubt it? Why do you doubt it? Simply because where there is one lie, there are others. We know now that stories about lampshades being made out of the skins of Jews were hoaxes. We've heard such hoaxes around other wars and around other ethnic cleansing exercises for years. The Iraqis in Kuwait throwing the babies out of the incubators proved to be a lie. Nazis making lampshades out of skin proved to be a lie. So who made that up? Who made that up? And why did they make it up? Why? Can we talk about that, can we? Can we? Well, I can, because I don't care what I'm labelled on a social media network by a journalist from the Jewish Chronicle, or by a Jewish MP in Leeds, or by a woman who occasionally writes articles for The Guardian. I don't care what you call me. I can sleep at night. My body of work, my career exonerates me from any accusation that I might be some closeted and clever bigot who hates Jews or anybody else. It's bollocks. Where there's one lie, you'll find another. Why make up stories about lampshades being made out of skin? Why? Who made it up? Was it the people that the Jewish historian talked about? Was it? Alfred Lilienthal. He talked about the exploitation of the Holocaust. Was it him? Or was it them, I should say? Was it them? He said Zionist organisers who manipulated for essentially private purposes both the post-war sensitivities of national governments and the anguish and misery of Jewish concentration camp survivors. So did they manipulate the post-war sensitivities of governments by making up stories like the lampshade story? Why did they do that? The stuff the Nazis did was bad enough without making those stories up. At that particular time, there is historical evidence to show that there was a race to come up with stuff like that, like this lampshade nonsense. Was it done to manipulate the sensitivities of national governments? And if that was done to manipulate the sensitivities of national governments, did they say 6 million? When maybe they didn't really know. It was an awful lot, obviously. You know, it obviously was. But did somebody say, let's put the figure 6 million on it? I don't know. But I'm open to the possibility of it. And the people who manipulate the sensitivities of national governments in the 40s and 50s are the people who did attempt and do attempt to ethnically cleanse the indigenous people of Palestine. So did they have the motivation to exaggerate the total number of Jewish people killed in Nazi Germany? And again, I repeat, whether it's 1 million, 3 million, 5 million or 6 million, it doesn't matter. It doesn't minimise it. This is the new speak language of the fascist progressive left. It minimise, oh, you're a hater because you minimise it. No, I don't. You can't minimise it. You can't. I visited Dachau in 2001. I saw Auschwitz. Can't minimise that. You just can't. They killed gays, gypsies, the disabled, Jews, Catholics, Russians. They were lunatics. But less than 2 years after the death of Hitler and the liberation of Europe, Zionist terror groups, trigger warning coming, Nazis in all but name were ethnically cleansing Palestinians and using the Holocaust even then to justify it, weren't they? Are the descendants of these people behind the harassment of the former mayor of London, Ken Livingstone? When he talked about the Havre Agreement between the Nazis and some German Zionists, and the coin that was minted, it was a historical fact. Why was he targeted thus? Why was he targeted in such a way for talking about an aspect of that particular period before Jews were rounded up? The Nazis did a deal with German Zionists to transfer money and property to Palestine. Why are people so desperate to shut that down, to label it anti-Semitism and to not talk about it? Why? See, this is journalism. Why? I'm not going to answer that question for you today. That's for you to determine for yourself. Why? Why do they scream hate speech, bigot, racist? Why do they insist that Jewish people must be protected from this stuff? Protected from what? Who are the people so desperate to shut all of that down? Here's one of them. Here's one of them right here. Gideon Falter, the main man in the charity, the campaign against anti-Semitism. Had a few run-ins with this guy. This guy was screaming and bawling and screaming and bawling about the fact that various theatres were hosting speeches, not speeches, but talks by David Icke. And groups like his and his were contacting these venues and were putting extraordinary pressure on these venues to cancel the events. Not just by David Icke, but by, again, Gilad Atzmon and others. With Gilad, it was concerts. A charity, imagine. This guy is the Witchfinder General in the United Kingdom. Sees anti-Semitism behind every tree and around every street corner. Even though a summary or a cursory examination of all the polling and all the statistics in the last 3 or 4 years concludes that there is no real rise in anti-Semitism in the UK. And anti-Semitism in the UK doesn't really exist here in general. It just doesn't. That is irrational hatred of Jews just because they are Jews. It doesn't exist here. It really doesn't. Falter was repeatedly challenged to debate Icke on multiple platforms. I could forgive Falter for saying, I don't want you to be the moderator, Richie, because you're an old pal of Icke's. I would forgive that, of course. Even though I said to Falter, I'll make sure you get equal time. I will stop either side from interrupting the other. I will time the responses and I will keep my opinions out of it. But he refused to debate David Icke. Falter works for the Jewish National Fund UK as well. So this guy, who's a rabid Zionist, runs a charity which for donations depends on it finding anti-Semitism around every street corner, like all the other charities, Hope Not Hate and Kick It Out and all those morons. You know, you wouldn't have any oxygen, you wouldn't exist, you wouldn't be on telly talking about this stuff unless you were regularly finding racism and anti-Semitism. This guy, Falter, is on the board of the Jewish National Fund in the UK, which essentially subsidises projects, building projects in West Bank settlements. Yeah. Yeah. That's kicking people out of their homes. That West Bank settlements is making Palestinian people homeless and putting Jewish people in there. That's what the Jewish National Fund does. Subsidises projects in the West Bank. Only Jews can mortgage or lease their land. And this guy Falter here is a board member, or at least he was. I know I should have double checked that he still is, but I think he still is. If he's not, I will apologise. But he was. And he's the go-to guy on national media when they want to talk about anti-Semitism in the UK. Lovely. Yeah. I'm going to say any more about this guy, Falter. And then we have this guy, who's probably deleted some of his tweets. This is Marlon Solomon. Told you I was rubbish at this, didn't I? I told you I was rubbish. This is Solomon in a less than successful attempt to protest a speech by David Icke. Solomon is the guy wearing the David Brent leather jacket and the trainers, second from the left. As you look at it there, this is him. Like I said, he's nobody. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's unfair to say that people are nobodies. But in terms of status, in terms of your reach and your platform, Solomon is just a Zionist Jew, as far as I can understand, in Manchester. Spends a lot of time screaming and bawling and wailing, keening, moaning. His Tweets overnight on Saturday into Sunday morning were very revealing in terms of the toxicity of them, screaming and ranting and raving and demanding that I send interviews that I've done to my Jewish accountant and to other Jewish colleagues of mine. This guy here, Solomon. And this is him. This is his Twitter profile pic. And he's the one who has claimed, spuriously of course, that I tried to hide from my position, which I've just outlined in the last 15-20 minutes, on the estimates of numbers of Jewish people killed during the war years, which of course I haven't ever hidden from, and I've said it more than once, and I've explained rationally why it is that I think as I do, and why I think lies are being told somewhere. We know that provable lies have been told, demonstrably provable. I've just proven, I've just talked about lies that were debunked about it. These guys come out, what they do is they do their job, whether they know it or not. The current paradigm is to scream racist at people, to call them bigots, and to run away from debating them, and to use your get out of jail card when challenged to debate. When challenged to debate, your get out of jail card is, oh, I don't debate with racists. That doesn't hold any water, that, you know. That's a tired old excuse to avoid confronting the person that you have a grievance with. Said to these people, air your grievances on my radio show. Why does it offend you so much that I said I am sick to effing death of the Holocaust? Why? Why does it offend you so much that I point out that the architects of the Zionist state of Israel, which I call illegitimate, which pisses you off as well, of course. Why does it offend you so much that I wonder whether those people had the motivation to tell stories about lampshades out of Jewish people's skins, and whether they had the motivation to inflate the numbers, which again are cited at being between 3 and 6 million. And I'm going to say it for the 5,000th time over the last few days. To me, and I mean it, never, ever lacked courage, whatever you might think of me, nor the courage of my conviction. To me, it doesn't matter. And by saying it doesn't matter, it's not ignoring or trying to wipe away the suffering of some. No. Lots of people were killed. Lots of Jews. Lots of Russians. Gypsies. Roma. Catholics. Disabled folks. The mentally challenged were killed. It was a horror story. And you couldn't minimise it by asking a question or expressing doubt about the number. You couldn't minimise it. So that's where I leave that, really. I know there are other things I wanted to say on this subject, but I just can't be arsed. I made some bullet points, like I said. There are other things I want to say. I just can't be arsed. You know, there is a body of work going back in this particular radio show 5 years now, or 5 years of September. Before that, my time in Spain, where I presented a very popular evening programme where I was employed by a very prominent member of Marbella's Jewish community. Really. And talked about these issues and asked the man who employed me, the prominent member of the Jewish community, you got any problems with me talking about this stuff, Martin? He said, no, Richie. As long as you're challenging the people and putting the other side of it across, I don't mind. That's what I do. The interview with Nick Collarstrom wasn't my finest hour. I would be the first to admit that, having listened back to it last night. It wasn't great. Like I said, there were opportunities to go after Nick a bit more than I did, which is what I normally do, strangely enough. Just listen to interviews over the last few weeks. You don't have to go back too far to find me going after people on the subject of Israel, even people whom I agree with. But the Cornerstrom interview wasn't my best, and I acknowledge that. Mea culpa. Not perfect. Radio presenters have bad days as well. Finally, am I influenced by my very, very strong feelings about Zionism and my feelings about Palestine? Am I clouded in some way by how I feel about Zionism, how I despise it and what it's done? And my empathy for the Palestinians, has that clouded my thinking? Has it clouded my judgment ever in my professional career? I'm not the right person to ask that question, because I wouldn't give, because I would just say I don't think so, or no, I haven't been, or I am not. But there are friends of mine who vehemently oppose my positions on these issues, vehemently, and they're the right people to ask. Has Richie's editorial policy, has his monologues, has his summing up of not only historical events but current geopolitical events, are they clouded by his passionate feelings about Zionists and about Palestine? You'll have to ask the people who disagree with me but who like me for that answer. They'll give you an answer. I like to think that I'm not clouded by it or prejudiced by my opinions. You know, but I don't know. It's not fair of me to ask that of myself, maybe, especially when I'm dealing with my opponents. So there you go, look. Tomorrow we'll go back to the paper format, which is what we're supposed to be doing now. Today, I'm just going to leave it there. There were a lot of comments came in there. My sincere apologies for not getting to them all. And yeah, I'm sure there were some ones in there that were critical. I've not ignored them. I just can't see them. Look, scrolling through them there. That's me. All right. And there you go. That's it for me, really. That is my take on the events of the last 4 days and some of the things that have been said on Twitter about me, which I don't care, really, and my programme and my audience and the guests that I've had on. So the absolutely bloody final word, then, the ABF is, if writers for the Jewish Chronicle, if writers for The Guardian, if people who work for organisations like the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism or the Northwest Friends of Israel or the Anywhere Else Friends of Israel, if you want to have an adult, rational, respectful conversation with me on my programme about anything that I've said here today or anything that I've said previously, get in touch with me through my website, send me your Skype details, and I'll be delighted to have you on the programme. Otherwise, sincerely, I'm going to pay no more attention to you, because it is intellectually redundant. Intellectually, that's ironic. Intellectually redundant to scream at people on Twitter and to invite others to pile in. And to invite others to pile in. And then run away. And not give the object of your ire, namely me, a public airing or a chance to broaden out these subjects in a public forum, whether it's on my radio show or anywhere else. Okay? enjoy your Monday. I'll be back with you for a extended roundup of the news at 5 o'clock today. That's a mad day. There's still so much going on in the new house. It's crazy. We took over. We've got this house. And it's lovely. But it needs quite a bit of work done to it. And some of it is urgent. And it's lovely and it's wonderful. And the future Mrs. Allen is loving it. And it's great. But it really is mad. But it's coming together. Slowly but surely. And I don't know. I've managed to stay reasonably calm and rational as we've gone through it. Because I'm not the best with upheaval and clutter and workmen and tradesmen and women and all the rest of it. I'm just not. I'm no good with it. Right? But it's going on, and it's caused a minor disruption to the program. It's been on and it's caused a minor disruption, but we'll see how it goes. Right. So there you go. Please, when this uploads automatically to YouTube, because YouTube, it will now process and it will upload. Please share this far and wide. When I put the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, obviously, as the tagline, it is referring to me, who I am, what I represent and what I think. Nobody is going to use Twitter to slander me and to falsely misrepresent what it is I think and to claim that I've got some animosity or anger or boil towards any group of people. You're not going to be allowed to do that. Ever. I'm going to stop you. I've got the platform, I've got the audience, and I've got balls of steel. I don't fear you. I'm not a tough guy, I'm not a big hard man, talking tough, but I don't fear you. You don't mean anything to me. I'll never bow down. Never hide from what I really think. I've just told you what I really think. Now, you revert to type and go back screaming on Twitter or come and meet me. Shake my hand like a man or a woman and say, right, let's have it. I'll tell you why I am offended by this or about that. And I'll say the microphone is yours. And when you're finished speaking, because I will listen to you, then I will come back at you. That's how it used to be. That's what conversation used to look like. Now, it's a few characters on Twitter. Sloganeering. Rage. Piling in. Bullying. I'm not saying I was bullied. Nobody could bully me. But other people are bullied. And that's what we've been reduced to as people. Right, I'm out of here. I've got to go and figure out the topics for the Richie Allen radio show. And we won't be talking about this at 5 o'clock. All right. We won't be. Lots more to talk about then. And as I said, remember, when this is up online, do share it far and wide. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Bye from me.